Hello, my name is Woody. This is Change in the House of Pods, a podcast about Deftones. My guest on this episode is Zach Wilborn, vocals for 30 Nights of Violence. That's Marbled Regression from their latest EP, You'll See Me Up There. So this summer, Marbled Regression was listed on Revolver's Best New Songs You Need to Hear Right Now feature, and I was immediately struck by their name. You know, that 30 Nights of Violence is a lyric from MX. Of course you know that. It's one of the sexiest songs of all time. Anyways, I thought, what a cool fucking name for a band. I really hope they don't suck. And as luck would have it, they do not suck. Their music is awesome. And on top of that, they're awesome guys. Now, this is one of two new episodes you'll hear this week. Hopefully you'll hear, listen to, as there's an accompanying episode with Kelly Cook, who plays guitar for 30 Nights. And initially I spoke with both Zach and Kelly at the same time, but, what had happened was Zoom. You know, it Zoomed on me. Anyways, the results, I think, is a much better conversation with each of the guys. And in this one, Zach and I talk about how he got into Deftones, how 30 Nights evolved from a band called Pinion that both Zach and Kelly were in, a band that actually covered My Own Summer. And we talk about that and what they might cover now if they were to play a Deftones song. And at the end of this episode, we had some fun. We hastily threw together our dream Deftones set list, which was really fun to think about, an idea I wish I'd come up with earlier and asked some previous guests. Speaking of which, please go back and enjoy the episodes leading up to this one. I'm not shitting you when I tell you, each one has some unique insight into this band. Listen to my conversation with Matt James from Vows, an incredibly insightful guy. I mean, Chino asked him for input during the writing of Ohms. That should tell you something. Even in the last episode with Jeff Cagle, I learned that Chi wouldn't sign somebody's skin. Just a cool little nuance that otherwise I wouldn't have known. Small stuff like that has been really cool to learn, and there's a ton of it sprinkled throughout the entire season. And this is season one of at least two, which the next one will come out in the spring sometime. I'm going to take a little break after next week's season finale, my conversation with Bron from Mastodon. But please reach out to me if you want to talk about Deftones, especially if you have a cool story. I'm at Woodbruh on Twitter and IG. Obviously, I love talking about Deftones. So hit me up. It's great to get your feedback. Even cooler to hear your stories and opinions or your dream set list. And speaking of opinions, Black Stallion just dropped. I do have some thoughts that I will share in the next episode with Kelly Cook, if you need another reason to listen, I guess. But let's find out how Zach got into Deftones first. This is my conversation with Zach Wilborn from 30 Nights of Violence.
Pretty simple. I had a older brother at the time, two older brothers actually, who put me on to pretty much any kind of heavy music, and it was kind of my introduction to heavy music, like, as a whole. Deftones specifically, I remember my oldest brother showed me the music video to Back to School from White Pony, and I mean, that was it. And then from there, I had a old iPod at the time, and I remember, like, scrounging up like a couple bucks and like giving it to my mom, and then going on iTunes and just like picking singles. I was like, I want this one, and I want this one, and I want this one. I just wanted to like pick it all. So I grabbed, I had Hexagram, Good Morning Beautiful was another one. I bought Back to School and Change. And then Rocket Skates from Diamond Eyes. It had like just come out. So I bought that immediately too, and just threw them all on my iPod.
2010-ish?
Yeah, right around then. 2010, maybe, like, yeah, 2010.
Like, how old were you in 2010?
Fifth grade. So yeah. No older than probably like 11 years old.
That's rad. Yeah. How old are your brothers?
So my oldest brother, I'm trying to do some math, how many years? He must have been, if I had been 11, he must have been 25 or 26 around that time. And then my middle brother is only 2 years older than me, so he's probably like 13. But my oldest brother is the one who put me on. And then from there, you know, my middle brother was into like getting into like all the other new metal bands at that time too. And so that all kind of like trickled its way into the mix as well. So that was like Deftones, Korn, Slipknot was all like around me. And I owe it all to them, but Deftones specifically to my oldest brother.
So you were, it was 2010, and you got into nu metal probably like 10 years after, like that was next, because you said Deftones were your first step into heavy music. So like your entire like first leap then was nu metal.
Yeah, 100%. Specifically, like, I don't know why, like, I guess I didn't feel like I was shortchanged on anything. I mean, I knew, I guess by that point, I'd probably found some like hair metal or like 80s metal around there, because my dad was super into like classic rock, and some of that like trickled into that scene as well. So like, I'd always been versed, I guess, in rock music, alternative music, whatever you want to call it. And then metal kind of found its way in there for me. But like, yeah, nu metal, I guess if you want to look at it that way, it was kind of like my true introduction to all heavy music as a whole. So
that's cool as shit.
Yeah. I'm grateful for it. Yeah. And I'm glad it kind of panned out that way. And it's really, I mean, I find myself more often than not exploring the nu metal catalog and that shit that I got into first than most other things still, even within that space, you know.
That's cool as hell. As somebody who is an unapologetic like nu metal fan.
Right.
I mean, you know, I like the popular stuff for sure. I'm not gonna go deep and say like I was a student of the game and like every Flyleaf song that came out, like I knew, like nothing like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
But like I definitely loved the, I don't know, who are the big four of nu metal? Like Deftones, Korn, Limp Bizkit, and somebody else?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Papa Roach,
I
mean, Linkin Park probably.
Yeah, right? Linkin Park. Yeah, I'd give it to them. Yeah, probably those four.
That's cool as shit. What else? So was music like important to you immediately at 11 years old?
Yeah, music has been incredibly important to me like for as long as I can remember. So my trajectory is like kind of strange. Like my dad was really into like jam bands and classic rock and that kind of thing. So my earliest listening ever were all like jam bands, specifically Grateful Dead. So that was like the first band that I guess I had associated with like having members playing on stage. And like my first memories of music kind of as a whole are tethered to them. And then like Widespread Panic, Phish, like that scene.
Oh wow.
And yeah, so, and I still love all that shit too, again, like unapologetically, and same with nu metal. It's like weird, but yeah, so that was first. And then again, he kind of put me on, and then like Aerosmith, fucking trying to think of other ones. Elvis was like a big one too. It was kind of like all over, you know. My dad was always involved, I guess, in like counterculture. And especially like throughout like the late 60s, early 70s, that was like his prime, like college days. So a lot of that was very embedded in me at like a really young age.
Yeah. So did you like immediately bring Deftones or the music that you were getting really excited about to school? Had you already been like talking about music, sharing music with your friends and that sort of thing? Was it like a communal sport at that point yet?
Like, yes and no. Like, I was very open about like the shit that I liked, but no one else was into it. Like a lot of my like community that I came from and grew up in, like, didn't really, I guess, value that kind of thing. Didn't really value like arts, music, like that kind of thing. Just way more into other shit, athletics, whatever, bunch of different stuff. So like music.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. Where are you from?
Huntsville, Alabama.
Oh, wow. No shit. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Right. It makes sense. Yeah. It adds up. And so, yeah, I like was always into it. And thankfully, like my brothers were into it too. And I had like a couple neighborhood friends who were like into rock music. And so it's not like it was completely barren when I was a child when it came to like my social circle and music. But yeah, I mean, I was one of the very few kids who I think like really got into it. And then as I got a little bit older, you know, some of my other friends kind of like caught up, you know, and got into that shit too, and then going into like middle school and high school. So
but by that time, were you like, I would imagine that, you know, you spent some money on iTunes and then you got further into Deftones, but had you like moved on to what else were you listening to as you started to get into sharing music like in common with your friends?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of metal music, and it was a lot of nu metal. I listened to like right behind Deftones, I got really into Brian Welch, like just as a person, and his kind of like story, not so much like the religious aspect of everything, but just like, you know, his whole addiction story and turning all that shit around. And I think like that kind of tied me to Korn, like in a really weird way too. So like Deftones and Korn were like it for me for a long time. And so it wasn't until like maybe a couple years later, I kind of got more into just like punk music and then like the predecessors of like hardcore punk. So a lot of like Black Flag and Suicidal, Minor Threat, The Germs, Rollins Band, all that kind of shit.
And you're probably in like high school at this time.
Yeah, like really early high school. And then that also kind of branched into around the time when I was able to actually start going to like local shows in my community. And so that exposed me to hardcore and deathcore and like a bunch of other shit around there. And I mean, granted, I'd already kind of been exploring the internet a little bit by that time and getting put on to like a bunch of other shit. So I was into like, you know, everything from Deftones and Korn to like I said, like Suicidal and Minor Threat to fucking like for deathcore, for me, it was like Whitechapel was like a huge one. And then on the other side of that with like hardcore around that time must have been like Minus and like Minority Unit, a lot of the California bands I was getting really into around that time too. So it's kind of like a big mix melting pot. And it's like, I just kind of liked what I liked and kept rolling with it. So
dude, what's the hardcore scene like in Alabama? What is the Alabama hardcore?
It was like coming up, like now it's awesome. And there's a lot of like younger kids who are involved and like kids making bands and shit. And it's like, it's flourishing. It's kind of like, you know, a new chapter for them, which is really cool to see. When I was coming up, there were like a handful of bands and like the same handful of bands played every show with like a bunch of other touring acts. And the touring acts, we would sometimes get like really, really cool tours to actually come down. Most of the time is like a routing date for a lot of them. But I mean, it was a lot of like mixed genres. So like you would have the same like couple bands at that time, which was everything from like hardcore and mostly deathcore. That was actually pretty much it. We're playing with touring pop punk bands or touring hardcore bands, touring deathcore bands, all kinds of shit. It was basically like the scene kind of existed out of the like necessity to have shows, and it didn't really matter who it was. So I mean, there could be like a 100+ paid crowd for some pop punk band who no one's heard of with a bunch of locals. So I mean, it had its ups and downs, but I mean, it was very DIY, kind of introduced me to that whole ethic. And yeah, it was very, very kind of bare bones, but I mean, the people who were running it at that time were like making it happen. So it was cool. It was always there, always existed, even if it wasn't the biggest, like most flourishing thing. It was cool though.
So, and this must've been 2000 then, like 15, 16, right?
Yeah. Like well, at that time must've been 2013. Yeah. 2013, 2014. And then I graduated high school in 2016. So yeah, I was pretty in it around then. So it was, yeah, it was still going on around then too.
So at what point then did you start playing music and performing? I would imagine that you were a part of that scene then, right?
Yeah, totally. So I like started playing drums when I was 8 years old. And then just like as a hobbyist, it was like my shit, my thing. And I started playing in bands pretty much as soon as I could drive. So like once I was 16, like got a car, I would like work. You know, I worked at fucking Jimmy John's, like trying to scrounge money to buy gear and that kind of shit. I played drums for bands. I played bass for bands. I think like my first like true hardcore band was this band called Shade that I played bass for. And it was actually like ex-members of like My Children, My Bride. And so they were kind of like, I mean, like we were kind of like the shit, not gonna lie. It was awesome though, but I still really like those songs. But yeah, those were like those were like my first moments of, yeah, like playing. And then once I moved to Nashville 2016, right after high school, I started playing bass for bands immediately. And then everything else just kind of like happened after that. So,
word. So the, that's dope that you're a drummer. It's funny, like there's sort of been this theme of drummers on this podcast, which is kind of rad. Were any of the folks in the bands that you were in, or like other people in the scene, do you remember connecting with any of them over Deftones? Was that ever a commonality that you had with them?
Not until like some of the dudes in Shade like fucked with it and were like into it and had been into it, because I was kind of like a younger cat among some older guys, and I was like the youngest member of the band. So I guess they were kind of like past that already, however you want to put it. It wasn't really until I moved to Nashville that there were like a lot of people in my immediate circle who like really fucked with Deftones. Word. And we could like chat about like every record, you know, and talk like really, really get into it, split hairs about it, you know.
Who are those people? What, like, how did you connect with them?
So when I moved to Nashville, I joined a band immediately called Pinion. And we were like a kind of like a death metal, like grind kind of project. And pretty much everybody in that band, who now have like a lot of those members have carried into 30 Nights, were all into Deftones like heavily. Like, and we covered My Own Summer, I think like once or twice. But yeah, they were the first, I guess, kind of core group of people that celebrated Deftones, as well as just like kind of all the new metal bands, which just wasn't what I was used to at that time. But Deftones specifically, yeah, we really connected on like the early stuff, and then like all the shit, really.
That's so rad. It's so funny to me. I mean, obviously Deftones have heavy ass music, and that's one of the reasons why we love them, but you know, they also do really pretty ass music. So it's super fascinating to me how musicians in like really, really extremely heavy bands come to all like Deftones. And absolutely. I wonder, so you were like, when you were in Shade and you did the cover of My Own Summer, were you the vocalist at that point, or were you playing bass still?
Yeah, so that was Pinion, and I was playing bass for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun cover.
Tell me about it. Like, tell me about your experience, like playing that with your band.
It surprisingly, like, I remember one time when we played it specifically, it was at a venue in Nashville, just a house venue, like small basement. And we played it definitely like maybe a little bit faster than we should have. So like, but the groove was just like, it was fucking hard, dude. And like our guitar players just had like, again, we were like a grind project. So I mean, the tone is just like totally different. Yeah. And like, you know, whatever Steph might be using or whatever. So, I mean, it was like fucking nasty riffage, like, and then it was awesome, you know, and it popped off. Like, people were really fucking into it. And, and I mean, it's like, if people may not celebrate, I guess, Deftones the way like my band kind of did at that time, but people knew the fucking song. And so people were popped off to it. It was awesome. It was a lot of fun. And that's all we really wanted it to be. It's like, let's fucking throw this in there and have some fun. That's we wrote Team Sleep on the set list. That was like the code word.
Oh, word.
I remember that. Yeah, it was funny.
That's cool as shit. And was everybody into Team Sleep too?
I knew that like Ryan, our guitar player at the time, was really into him, and Kelly, both of them were really into Team Sleep. I think I was maybe a little bit behind around that time. Generally speaking, though, no, I guess like Team Sleep was kind of like the hush hush, you know,
best kept secret, like,
of Deftones.
Super like the opposite direction of a deathcore band. Like, that's
absolutely,
yeah, that's different. That's cool as hell, though. Then what? So your next band was 30 Nights?
Yeah, right after that. So 30 Nights kind of spawned from that band breaking up. So we had made a decision at that point that like shit just wasn't working out. And so Kelly and I at that time were already demoing like new shit, kind of as just like a passion project, like didn't have a name. It was just something that we were like fucking with. And sort of like when that band fell apart, we were in a position to, you know, dedicate a lot of time to this. And I was like, fuck it. Like, I know, like, we're just kind of doing this right now, but we should fill out the lineup and just make it a fully fledged thing. And from that point, Ethan, who played drums for Pinion, came in and started playing drums for 30 Nights at what would be 30 Nights. And we all kind of like just collectively picked out who else we wanted to be in the band. We grabbed Jake, who plays bass for us, and our other guitar player, James, and that was it. And I kind of knew in my head, I was like, I have to call it 30 Nights of Violence. Like, that's the thing, it has to be that. I had like come up with the name, I guess, sometime over the course that we were making demos. And I was like, this is it. This is what it's going to be. It's what it's going to be called. And yeah, then it kind of
Kelly was the first person you told.
Yeah, Kelly wrote a lot of the initial material, because I had decided at that point that I just kind of wanted to be a lyricist and vocalist, and that's all I really wanted to do. And I kind of wanted this band to be that for me to step into that role, because it's something I hadn't done yet. And yeah, what so, a trip. Yeah, I mean, I
just because been you into got it. Tired of carrying instruments around, or what?
I guess so. Yeah. My frontman syndrome started kicking in. I'm just kidding. But yeah, I mean, I just, it's something I hadn't done yet and thought it sounded like a good idea. It's funny though, but like the first time I ever extensively like did vocals was the first time we recorded. I had never I'd like practiced a bit, but I mean, doing that, I guess, doesn't really prepare you for like going into the booth and just fucking doing it, you know?
And really let it rip. I mean, you really let it rip. Is it just you? Are you the only vocalist? Isn't somebody else does some harmonizing in the band?
Yeah. So I kind of like do the primary vocal lines. Ethan, Jake, and Kelly all back me up. And then Ethan, I would probably say, does the most, like right after me. And there are passages that will just be him or something like that. But yeah, he and I just have two very different vocal kind of like textures as a whole. And so we kind of play off of that and let each other kind of take the lead at different times. But yeah,
it's rad. It's super rad. I'm curious if you knew Kelly or any of these guys prior to Pinion.
No, like so you, it, go ahead. I like knew that a band needed a bass player. I had like just got to town, like just enrolled in college, freshly moved in. And, you know, at that time I was like, I have to join a band. Like that was my goal. It was like, get involved, find a band, do something. Kelly was actually playing bass for Pinion originally. So they were like a four piece. Oh, wow. And I met Ethan at a show and, you know, we hit it off and I just kind of threw it out there. I was like, yo, like I play bass. Like I know you're a four piece, but if you ever wanted to expand and make it a five piece thing, let me know. And I think like a week later we were rehearsing, you know, or I had like my first rehearsal with them.
Awesome.
Yeah. It was great. It was very organic. Put it out there, right? Yeah. It was fun.
That's cool as shit. So at some point somebody just says like, want to cover Deftones, or somebody just, maybe you guys are just listening to it at, you know, before or after rehearsal, that sort of a thing.
Yeah. I think like, you know, we would always like jam songs like just to kind of fuck around like at rehearsal and that kind of thing. And I think originally the plan was to cover Around the Fur. That was like the first plan, and then I think there was like some talks about like how it would be received or something, or like if we're gonna play this, like is anyone even gonna fucking know it, you know? And so we decided to go with the hit.
Yeah,
sub in My Own Summer instead, and it worked. So but I think I was one of the bigger proponents for like I want to do like, I guess I don't really consider Around the Fur like the title track, like a B-side, but perhaps a lesser known track from the record.
Yeah.
Whatever. No doubt. Not a hit. Yeah. Whatever's not a hit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, My Own Summer and Be Quiet Drive are definitely the ones I feel like people know. And then right. Head Up is the one that fans like count on, I think. And then mm-hmm. There's like everybody else's pick a favorite, like from there. It's sort of how it feels to me. So at this point now in 30 Nights of Violence. So you guys have been a band for what, 3-4 years now?
2 years now.
Oh, just, yeah. Just two, really?
Yeah, yeah. We formed October 2018. Yeah, it was like 2 years this year.
Have you guys, and already like 6 months of no live shows? Unless yeah. You guys, You haven't pulled off anything in front of like a bunch of parked cars or anything like that, have you?
No, I actually just saw someone in Nashville do something like that recently, like a drive-in show. And I was like, wouldn't be opposed to it. Could be cool, you know, but no, we haven't tried anything like that yet.
It's it's a weird time, man. Live music.
Totally. I know. I need it
so bad. So have in the 2 years then, or year and a half that you've had opportunities to perform, have you guys done a Deftones song?
No. No, we haven't. I don't know why. I guess there's something about like playing covers that I totally understand, where it's like sometimes a band plays a cover, right? And they will only become known for that cover. And then every show, everyone just wants the cover. And so like, not to say it's like harm reduction, but like sometimes you don't want to throw the distraction in the mix, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we haven't yet. I mean, we have the name. There's been talks about like we've dabbled with the idea of doing like recorded covers, and like whether or not they slip into a live mix or anything like that, who knows? Frankly, like one of the hardest things for us is deciding what song to fucking cover. That's the thing, you know. I would like to with the group of musicians, and not to shit on my old band, but I mean, I just think like the caliber of what we got going on is maybe a bit higher. And so like, I would maybe like to see what that could look like. But yeah, we've thought about it. It's just, again, like in what capacity do you do it? And then like, what fucking song do you do? You know, it's tough.
And expectations, of course, now that exactly. You got the name, yeah. It's kind of like, okay.
Exactly. Wow.
And that does add another layer. You're probably smart to stay away from it. But that said, if you were to attempt it just purely from a vocal standpoint, what do you think you would, because I'm sure you've sung along with all the songs in the shower. You know what you got.
You already know. Lotion, hands down. Yeah. That'd be my first.
That's
raw.
A monster. That's just a monster to try to do.
You just got
to
go for it, you know? I think like, most of the tracks, because like I'm not a great like singer, you know, I'm a bit limited. I'd probably say it would either be like something like Lotion, or maybe like Elite. Again, like it's got to be like foot on the gas whole time, just like throat shredding shit the entire time. So something in that capacity probably.
Does it give you any like any sort of optimism, knowing that like Chino didn't have a whole lot of experience before he started singing songs?
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess
you have some melodic qualities to your, like, there isn't an absence of potential or like room for you to do something else. You've definitely, I think you're capable, but you just probably aren't experienced, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, that's the thing. And like from like the first record and then doing the second record, like totally different process for me altogether. And like, I'm learning all the time. But I mean, who knows? Yeah. I think like this sort of band kind of spawning out of like, I wanted to do something that I hadn't done before, and kind of like exploring different comfort zones and that kind of thing has always kind of like remained a mantra, like song to song, record to record, whatever. And like, yeah, I mean, I'd probably keep that shit going. So, I mean, who knows? And again, like the more I learn, the more curious I become about what I can do and what limits we can push in that facet. So yeah, who knows?
That's very Deftonesian, if that's a word. I think I just made that up. It's very
Deftonesian. Like, it is now.
Let's see what kind of limits we can push. See what kind of things we can stretch. So,
you know,
all right. So let's talk a little bit about your favorite Deftones stuff. The first time we took a crack at this, we got to talk about Ohms and everything, and that was cool. And I feel shitty for having lost it. I think maybe we could probably like pull it in and sort of narrow it down a little bit and talk about just like your I don't know, do you have three favorite, actually, you know what would be a fun, I think, request of you is to ask for your three favorite non-Around the Fur albums, because I have a good, okay, strong feeling that Around the Fur is your favorite, right?
It is, yeah, you're right. Three after that probably would be Self-Titled, Koi, and then for the third spot, I don't want to say Adrenaline because it's too damn close. Probably Diamond Eyes, honestly, between those three.
God, I love all three of those albums. I don't even know how to ask first. Like, I don't even know where to begin on what. So with the Self-Titled, what is it that you think stands out, like, to you about the Self-Titled?
There's an element of not like subtlety, but there's sort of a more subdued aura, I think, kind of around that whole record. Like, granted, you have tracks like When Girls Telephone Boys that are like your hard, nasty Deftones tracks, but you also, I think it was kind of around that time, you know, right after White Pony, that I think they were sort of expanding upon the territory of really big, wide open choruses, big, wide, specifically, I think, of the guitar playing. I think around that time, you kind of notice Steph backing away from riff-oriented tracks and more big chord-oriented sort of, not like movements, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, like progressions and like, yeah, there's different. Yeah. I think instead of just the same banana, like over and over, yeah, although you get little bits of that. I mean, that's sort of a hallmark, right?
Right, exactly. I think it's one of their best, because I think they were still figuring out how do we balance sort of like these two identities as like Deftones, the clean, sexy, fun, light-hearted side, and like the fucking nasty, ugly, like go for the throat side, and sort of merge these worlds. And I feel like White Pony kind of starts to touch on that, and then Self-Titled really expands upon that, that sort of like dichotomy that they have. And then I think from there, like other records, again, just kind of expand upon that like further and further. It almost feels like maybe Self-Titled was sort of the start of like a very different evolution for them. Who knows? But yeah, I think that's like one of the most interesting things about that record. That is why I still gravitate towards it more than most.
I love that album so much.
Me too,
there's
man.
There's just something about like each and every one of those songs. Even like if I get to Lucky You and I'm like, this is not like the rest of this album. I'm
right.
Like I jam to it. I think that part of that is just the like emotional attachment to the music. But I think what you're saying is like right on point. Everything does get like bigger in terms of like the scope of the sound. It isn't just a narrow sort of like, there's a lot more soaring, like, mm-hmm, with chords and with lyrics, and it's different. It's just a different album. Again, I'm probably also just really tied to it emotionally.
So I mean, hey, me too, man.
That could be a thing. You know, it's a song that I always throw on though, when I like, especially, you know, when I was a teenager. Well, I mean, I guess I would have been early 20s, and like, got in the car, sunny day, windows down, System up, like Bloody Cape, just throwing that shit on.
Good
man,
one.
That gets you hype. That song just gets you hype. If you were going to listen to some, go ahead, say that.
I was just going to say, I feel the same way about Needles and Pins. That one's mine. Yeah. Just like the fucking groove at the beginning. It's unmatched, man. Just unparalleled.
What is it about Abe as a drummer?
Master of the pocket. And then the master of the expansion of like respecting time and space, you know. Abe, I can tell, values when he's not playing or the space that he's giving to the tracks just as much as when he's fucking rocking a groove or shredding a fill. You know what I mean? I feel like he really respects the space in between. And from a percussive standpoint, what that adds. And it, I think like a big thing with any musician is recognizing like your importance and also recognizing when you're really not that important. And I think Abe has kind of really fucking grasped that as far as like in the beats that he uses. For instance, I think like the beginning of Digital Bath probably could have had a million and one different kinds of grooves on it.
Yeah, right.
But allowing it to be wide open and really spacey just sets the fucking vibe for that whole track. And he writes to the song, and it's just like, he knows his fucking role and he masters it. And it, on top of that, he's just an incredibly talented musician. Yeah. So, I mean, it's
cool. I know breeze, that, baby. Yeah, that dude is a, I've said it to you before, you know, if it wasn't for that bop, it just wouldn't,
you know,
it wouldn't be Deftones if it wasn't for that
bop. Right.
I know that Sergio is a pick player and Chi was a finger player. So now knowing that you're a bassist, do you, and a drummer, do you feel a difference at this point? Like if you're to look at maybe the self-titled and Ohms or Gore or just the later efforts with Sergio, do you feel any sort of difference in the rhythm section?
Yes and no. I feel like, again, they serve the band, speaking on Chi and Sergio, they serve the band in just two completely different ways, and we're at two very different timestamps for both bands. You know, you like have Sergio walking into a very different kind of Deftones than Chi was from fucking, you know, Adrenaline to White Pony, you know, through self-titled up to Diamond Eyes, you know, it's just totally different. I think like Sergio, from a writing perspective and kind of like from where the band is at as a whole, again, like he serves the band in a very different way. I don't think that really shows a tremendous amount in like their playing styles, because I think, frankly, like the way that their shit is just mixed and the way they play live, it's very washed out. And I think like the lines between bass and especially with Steph playing extended range guitars, you know, kind of it's blurred a little bit. But no, I don't think I've noticed anything that I'm just like, oh yeah, like that's a Sergio moment, or oh, yeah, that's a Chi moment. I think like, you know, or I'm just assuming that, you know, when they chose Sergio maybe to take that spot, that, you know, maybe they didn't want to do anything to sort of alleviate like that comparison, I guess, you know what I mean? Or didn't really want that comparison to be made, rather. Yeah. And so they picked a musician who they think, I guess, would serve them best, like at that time, that both, you know, kind of clicked with Abe and can also merge with this like massive wall of guitars, you know, and make it work and make it really, really good.
Yeah, I think you're right. There is something about the greater sound that that Sergio has definitely, well, and I think that you even spoke to it with Abe, like they've the band seems to thrive on everybody servicing the song as opposed to like any one person's style standing out. Like you couldn't necessarily, I mean, not that Korn didn't write or doesn't write great songs, but like, that's fucking Fieldy on the bass. Or,
oh yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
totally.
Any number of bands where you're like, oh, that sound belongs to Tom Morello. That guitar, that's only one person's sound. Like, but even though, like, I still think that they have qualities, obviously, as musicians that are signature and key to them, but there is a service to the music and like the song,
totally,
the song itself.
I think like maybe Abe of all of them is probably recognized for his credits as just like kind of a musician alone, but it's rare that you really just ever hear someone talking about like, man, the way Steph played guitar, like just changed everything for me. You know, I feel like we observe them more at their best, which is, you know, when it's all five all together,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So from your second, third and fourth favorites, what are your favorite songs on those albums,
between like all three?
Yeah, well, just if you were going to pick one off each, like pick one off the self-titled.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool. Self-titled is tough. I'd probably go with Needles and Pins. It would either be that or like When Girls Telephone Boys, but I mean, there's so much other great shit in there. but we'll hold on to needles and pins for that. Coy. Rosemary comes to mind pretty much immediately. And kind of like to your point, I'm very emotionally tethered to that track.
Yeah.
So it would either be that, maybe like Swerve City. But I'll say Rosemary, and then Diamond Eyes. Either Beauty School. Fuck. Either Beauty School or Rocket Skates. Honorable mention to Prince.
That's rad.
Yeah.
Does Prince sound like RX Queen to you?
A little bit. Yeah. I feel like, I don't want to say it was like a, I feel like it was a nod. I'll say it's a nod to that track. I don't want to say it was like a sort of an expansion of that track or like a sister track, but definitely a nod for sure.
You know what's a trip is when that song came out, I remember being like, holy shit, this is like the sequel to RX Queen. Now they don't sound at all alike to me. Isn't right. that weird? Like,
yeah, time.
I don't get it. That's weird. Also, fucking both awesome to hear live. Fucking Prince is so cool. And you got to see them live, right? You went to Exit 111.
Yeah. Tell me about that experience. First time seeing Deftones, which was crazy. I actually have the set list. Awesome. Let me find that real quick.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was about as, you know, good, I guess, as like kind of them holding a like an open air festival slot can be, you know, and they weren't the headliner. So they had like, I think, a hard hour and a half, maybe even less, maybe like an hour. But it was great. And thankfully, a bunch of people had ditch that stage to go watch someone else. So I was right up there. It was great. Bye. Yeah. I was like, okay, see ya. I'll wait. Let's see what we got. So you've seen, it was a good mix, great mix of everything. You've seen The Butcher, Rocket Skates, Around the Fur, Be Quiet and Drive, Swerve City, Rosemary, Knife Party, Diamond Eyes, Minerva, which I was super stoked about, Change, My Own Summer, and then Head Up. So
it's weird to think about like all of those songs as you're reading them. They all sound like hits.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? Like totally they all sound like hits.
Yeah.
Which I'm not mad at. Like I've had discussions on this podcast about their set list and like, you know, what people want to see or expect to see. And especially when you're putting together like a festival set list, you know, you gotta
totally
try to please the masses. And there's a lot of people that aren't, you know, there for you or whatever, but fuck, to be able to fill out a set list like that full of hits.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nuts.
It was great. Yeah, it was awesome. Chino like ran all the way in the fucking crowd. We were like fucking 2 feet away from each other. That was very weird. Very weird for me. Like crazy, like weird full circle. I started having thoughts like back to my fifth grade youth and just like, it's crazy, you know, because it's like I had idolized this band for so long and it's like now I'm finally here and like my adult life is very very cool, very very emotional. It was awesome. And so like the live mix was actually great, which is, you know, kind of rare I guess for an outdoor festival. I was on Sergio's side, so I mean it was fucking bopping, dude. It was awesome.
Was Chino wearing his all white like painter's outfit?
Yep.
That's so dope. It's so funny how the style of this band has continued to evolve and yet at the same time continued to be mostly really dope. The white outfit though definitely gave me moments where I was like, yo, my man's gonna go paint a fence or paint a house.
Yeah, straight fucking up. Yeah. Crazy.
Okay, how I like to end each episode is with a request for three recommendations. This is inspired by something Chino said on a podcast that he only tweets links to music he likes because he thinks that's the coolest shit he could share on social media. So, three recommendations. Zach from 30 Nights of Violence.
I'll pick a record first. There's an awesome record called Let It Wander by a band called Circles Around the Sun. If you're into just like instrumental, very spacey, atmospheric kind of rock music, they're a little four piece that's fronted by one of my favorite guitar players and just overall musicians, gentleman named Neil Casal. He's amazing, and that band is amazing. So if you like sort of spacey rock. I would check that out. It's called Let It Wander, and the band is Circles Around the Sun. Let's see. If you like cool clothes, check out Online Ceramics. I think everything that they're putting out right now is super cool. It's a little heady, if that's kind of your vibe. Very spacey, cool shit.
And for my third recommendation, I'll go with a movie. If you haven't seen 20th Century Women, it's on Netflix. I would check it out. It's really cool, just like coming of age story, solid acting. I won't tell you too much about it because I think it's definitely something that you should just kind of like experience. It's a bit of a tearjerker, but it's really tight. Check it out.
Zach Wilburn from 30 Nights of Violence. Thank you, Zach. Zach is clearly, to me, the heart of 30 Nights of Violence. If you haven't heard their music yet, quit fucking around. Give them a listen. I really can't wait to see them on stage either, to be honest. And please listen to my conversation with Kelly Cook, their guitarist, who I think, if Zach is the heart of the band, Kelly's the head. I think you might pick that up, too, after you listen to that conversation. I'm really excited to see what this band has to offer as they grow. And Kelly alludes to some of that in our conversation. So, again, please have a listen. It's not every day you hear from bands that are named after your favorite band, and they fucking slap, so try them out. And now before we go, Zach and Kelly and I hastily came up with our Dream Deftones set lists. The rules were 10 songs with at least one from Ohms, which had only just come out when we spoke. And you can hear Kelly's and mine in the next episode. But here's Zach's dream set list.
So, Rocket's Gates opener. I think it just set such an incredible tone. It's too damn good. Then taking backseat a little bit. Needles and Pins to immediately follow that. Kind of set the vibe back a little bit, let it rock. Immediately into Elite, just want a really nasty Chino performance on a track like that that's so mean vocally. Then we'll go into a really spacey tune, Rosemary. Just undeniably heavy. And just one of the best that translates live, in my opinion. When Girls Telephone Boys, right after that, Get Mean, followed immediately by Around the Fur. From there, I would pick my only track from Ohms, which would have to be Pompeji or Pom, whatever it is.
I don't know. I don't know. And I don't want to know, yeah, to be honest with you. I don't want to know.
Yeah. It's open to interpretation. And then the Sprint to the End, my last three, Rats, 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 MX, and a Lotion closer.
Okay, that's it for my conversation with Zach from 30 Nights of Violence. Thank you, Zach, for being such a great sport and for naming your band after my favorite band. That's pretty intensely fucking cool. Now, after you've gone and listened to 30 Nights of Violence, check out my conversation with Kelly Cook, their guitarist. And mark your calendar for Christmas Day, in case you forgot, it's Christmas. That's when you'll hear my conversation with Bron Daler from Mastodon. My name is Woody. I'm a DJ at 93X in Minneapolis. You can hear me weeknights there. And on Saturday night, I host our metal show, The Pit, with my buddy Graham. That's Saturday night at 10 Central Time. If you're not in Minnesota, you can listen live on 93X.com. You can find The Change Pod there, too, on our website or on Spotify, Apple Pods, Google, iHeart, TuneIn, Omni. I appreciate you checking us out. Thank you for listening to Deftones, and thank you for listening to Change in the House of Pods.